And now it is my privilege to introduce Brian Key from Tulare.
All right. Okay. My name is Brian, and I am an alcoholic. I want to thank Bill for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope tonight. I used to come to this meeting quite a bit when I first moved here from Los Angeles. And I would sit over there. I had like a favorite spot, and I would come with Reyes. And I took a lot of newcomer chips. I took a lot of newcomer chips right over here, and took probably some dirty chips, and probably didn't take chips that I should have taken because I was too scared to get up again and stand up, you know, for another 30 days or another 60 days or. So, you know, I just celebrated a year of sobriety, and that is, you know, that's a gift, from God, you know, my higher power. My sobriety date is 1/27/17, and I came into Alcoholics Anonymous 1/27/2004. So it took me 13 years to get a year. And I share that because, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and I couldn't understand why I couldn't get sober, and that's the biggest riddle of all, right? I'm in a room with a bunch of alcoholics who are sober, and I'm an alcoholic, and I can't get sober, and I don't know why. And it never occurs to me it's because I'm an alcoholic. That's the baffling nature of this disease. It never occurs to me that there's nothing that I can do, that I'm not doing this thing wrong. Nothing's wrong with me except that I'm an alcoholic. You know, I had lots of people help me in this program. I can't even count the sponsors I've had on my hands. Many, many people who have sat with me, across from me, taken me through the book, not taken me through the book, given me worksheets, done all kinds of work with me, told me maybe I wasn't an alcoholic, maybe I was a sex addict, maybe I was a drug addict, you know, maybe I was just insane, maybe I was constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself, maybe. I had been here for, I think, 12 years at the time when I finally found somebody who used to come to this meeting. I met in this meeting. We met at a Starbucks one night, and I just thought, oh, I'm going to give this one more shot. I got nowhere else to go, you know. I got nowhere else to go. I can't figure this out. Something's wrong with me. I don't know where else to go. I can't stay sober. I can get sober, but I can't stay sober. And that was really weird to me because it was so, I loved AA. My whole family was here. My life was here, all of that. And I can tell you about like I can qualify in a little bit, but I want to just tell you how I met my sponsor. So I met my sponsor, and I really had never heard his story. He looked very clean cut. He's like this, first of all, I'm gay. So he's a straight guy. He's like this Christian, you know, young guy, and I didn't think we would jive, but there was something about him that I wanted, you know, and I didn't know what it was, I think it was his sobriety, you know, and I think that it was, he had a connection to a higher power that I couldn't access anymore. So we talked, and, you know, he listened to me, and I talked for 2 hours, and you know how newcomers are, right? So I was just like this and this, and, you know, I've tried this, and I've gone to therapy, and I put myself through rehab, and I came in here on my own free will, and I don't know why people come in, and they don't even want to get sober, and they stay sober, and what's wrong with me, and blah, 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 right? And I just said, I think I finally ran out of steam, and I just said, I just can't do it. I can't stay sober. And he goes, what'd you just say? And I go, I can't stay sober. I can't do this. And he goes, you're right. You can't. And that was the beginning of, that was the door. That was sort of like the, that was the doorway to sobriety for me, was really admitting, really understanding that I can't do this. I'm also a crier. I'm very emotional. So, but it took me, it took every bit of experience from the first time I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 2004. It took me a really long time to get to, I can't do this. I came in and I really, you know, when I got to AA, I came in, I think I came in too early. You know, I've heard in meetings, some people get here too early, some people get here way too late, you know, and some people get here right on time. And I didn't want to be an alcoholic. So I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. That doesn't mean I wasn't. You know, I took the first drunk I can remember. I took a drink. I would think I was 14 years old, and I was invited out with the cool kids. I went to high school in Tulare, but I grew up in Los Angeles, and I moved here, and I was this gay little fairy kid. Everyone, you know, called a sissy, and I found these two girls that would get me drunk and hang out with me, okay? And I'm still friends with them today. One's a therapist, and, you know, and they were the only two people that would hang out with this sissy kid, you know? And so I would hang out with them, and I remember drinking like Boone's, right? Or Bartles and James or whatever it was, right? But I remember drinking it and that, I just remember taking the first drink. That was it. And then I remember waking up in the boys' bathroom at my high school with my pants around my ankles with vomit in my pants. And it was like fourth period and I don't know how that happened, right? I don't know how I took a drink of Bartles and James and I wake up with vomit in my pants. So I clean my pants off and I wash them out in the sink and I wring them out as best as I can and I put them back on and I go to school and I have still lunch and two more periods. And I'm soaking wet and I'm covered in vomit and I audition for the school play and I get the lead. So that's how my drinking started, right? So that's how it starts. It starts right there for me. That's how it starts. And so what I realize is that, like, there was something about me or my personality or whatever that I didn't get the consequences that I saw all my other friends getting. Like, I didn't get grounded. I didn't get in trouble. My calculus teacher, right? So I'm in calculus class like this. And my calculus teacher goes, what's wrong with you? Are you sick? Something stinks. And I lied, like, straight to her face. Like, oh, you know, it's cough medicine. I think I said it was cough medicine or something or. And they probably didn't buy it, but they liked me enough to let me get away with it, right? And so that sort of like set the tone for my drinking. That was it. I didn't drink a lot after that during high school because I really wanted to get the hell out of Tulare. I could not wait to get back to Los Angeles. You know, and so I graduated high school. I went to Los Angeles and I went to a Jesuit school. And basically I was, again, the first night I was there, I was given a bottle of booze and I drank a bunch of rum. I passed out. I blacked out. I threw up in the shower and I was kicked out of my dorm for 24 hours. I was put on some sort of probation. This is like the first night in college, right? So I haven't drank since high school. I waited to get to college. I take a drink in college. I remember the first drink. It was like a luge, right? It was like an ice luge at a frat party, and then I'm out. And I'm in the shower, and I'm naked, and I'm, you know, I'm doing all kinds of things that get me in trouble. And so it was pretty easy. When I started to hear allergy to alcohol, that made a lot of sense to me because I don't I had a different reaction than other people. You know, when I drank, I blacked out. Well, I don't like to quit. So I kind of got better at that. And I don't know how that happened. I would swear off. So rum was out. You know, that was it. Never drinking rum again. So never drinking rum again. And I think I moved from rum to like vodka, and vodka did well for me for 10 years. And then I just didn't like beer because it made me gassy, and I have like an eating disorder, and I don't want to feel bloated and all that stuff. So then, you know, I'm in college and I'm drinking. I drink every single day for 10 years. I drink every single day for 10 years. And when I say drink, I mean, I was drunk every single day for 10 years. I came home for Christmas one year, and I was put in the hospital for kidney failure. I had an ulcer at 19, and it never occurred to me that it was my drinking. Never once. I was stressed out. I think I quit smoking a couple times because I was smoking pretty heavily during that time too. And I was always like downplaying the alcohol. And, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic home. My dad's an alcoholic. Well, I don't know if my dad's an alcoholic. It looked like that, but I don't know. He still has his house. He still has his job. He's never missed a day of work. That's not my story, right? I take a drink, and I'm gone for a couple weeks. You have to find me in a motel. Like, that's how I drink, right? So if that's my experience with alcoholism, my dad has a different experience. So he might just be a hard drinker. I don't know. He's still got a house, and I don't know how he does it. But I drank like that for 10 years, and so it started to kind of fall apart when the blackout started to come back, right? So the blackout started to come back, and I'll get sober here pretty soon. The blackout started coming back, and I would wake up in the middle of a fight, like a fist fight, at a gay bar, right? Like, I weighed 125 pounds at this point. I've never been in a fight in my life. I have like a Long Island iced tea, right, at a gay bar. And I black out, and I come to in the middle of a fist fight with a best friend, right? So these things start to happen. Or I would drink all night long and I couldn't get drunk. I would go home with like an $800 bar tab. And I couldn't get loaded. I couldn't get loaded enough. I couldn't. So something stopped working. And that really scared me because I couldn't gauge it. I used to know, like, it's two drinks here, then we're going to go here, and I'm going to do four drinks here, and it's going to go here, and then we're going to go there, and then I'm going to get some more stuff to get me more drunk, and then I'm going to do some other stuff to do this other thing. And I had it all. It was all planning and managing, and it was all managing and controlling my booze and other activities. What alcohol did for me is it made me feel like I thought everyone else felt. So I was very uncomfortable and shy, and probably really like not comfortable in my own skin. You know, I didn't fit in with straight people. I didn't really fit in with gay people, but I went to a lot of gay bars, and I realized when I got sober and I went to a bar, they're not very fun. Like, they're really awkward, and you're with strangers, and no one's drunk. I was the only drunk person at the bar. Like, that was the other thing I realized, is no one drank like me. Except there's one guy at a wedding now where I'm like, that's me. You know, the guy that is breakdancing with the children out in the middle of the wedding? That's me. Tie goes off, comes up here along your head, and so that was me. I was doing breakdancing at weddings and, you know, all kinds of stuff. But what was happening to me is that I had to take a drink to feel okay. I had to take a drink. I didn't get a choice. You know, I would go out nights and I would promise. I had conversations with I call him my Eskimo. His name is John C. and he lives in New York. But he was the bouncer at the bar that I went to all the time in Los Angeles. And every night I would go, I'm not going to drink today. He was like, cool. Hang on. I'm like, and I don't know why I was telling this guy, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm like, I'm just here, I'm hanging out with my friends, I'm the designated driver. He's like, cool, that's awesome, great. 10 minutes later, oh man, I drank. You know, I drank. I'm drinking. You know, he's like, better luck next time. You know, and I did this for like a year until finally I'm like, notice that this guy doesn't drink. This guy doesn't drink. This guy doesn't smoke. This guy is like totally talking to me. He's talking to me. None of my friends will talk to me anymore. And I am just talking to this guy. And I'm promising him every night I'm not going to drink, and I drink. And he tells me that he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, what the hell is that? I've never even heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So that was sort of my first introduction to AA, was this guy that knew what I didn't know, which is I could not take a drink. And I did it. I tried it every night. So I get in some trouble. I'm working on a TV show. I was an actor for a very long time, and I was on a TV show, and I'm coming home from an audition, and I go missing. I don't come home. I disappear for like 3 days. And the cops are called. My mom is called. The person I'm living with at the time is freaking out. This has never happened. And I had stopped drinking on my own. I had never gone to an AA meeting. I just kind of stopped cold turkey. And it didn't go very well for me, right? I had like a break. I had like a nervous breakdown, and I picked up and I ran off. And I'm supposed to be shooting like that day, right? So I don't know what happens, but I get two choices. Rehab, and everybody knows on the television show that I work on that I have to not work anymore and I have to go to rehab. Or I can go to an AA meeting. So I'm like, I'm going to go to AA. When's the next meeting, right? So that was a Wednesday night, sometime in 2004. What I heard at that meeting was, I identified with being an alcoholic, being powerless. I identified with, I really wanted help because I had scared a lot of people, and I didn't want to lose my job, and I didn't want to lose my family, and I didn't want to lose. But so I got sober. I found a sponsor. He was like a year sober. Bless his heart. He took me to the steps the best of his ability. He had all kinds of like worksheets and creative writing ideas. And, you know, sobriety in Los Angeles is so different than here. It really is. I mean, it depends on where you go, but like it's a very like a yoga class and a kombucha tea and, you know, all kinds of weird stuff that isn't in the book, you know, and it depends on what rehab treatment center you went to, that what kind of brand you're going to get. And so I kind of got this guy that didn't really know what he was doing, and he didn't take me through the book, and we did the best that we could, and I'd read a chapter and we'd come home and I'd talk about it, and I'd kind of get like a gold star, and then we'd move on to the next step, you know, kind of felt like homework, and I was doing really good. And I got through, oh God, it was great because I got to, I love the fourth step, right? I love a fourth step. I love that first column in the fourth step. What they did to me, you know, who they are, what they did to me, and that third column, how'd it make me feel, right? This made me feel like this is the reason I drank. These are the people, and this is the reason why I had to drink like this, right? So I love, people were like, the fourth step is so scary, and I was like, I can't wait to do it. And I had an 18-hour fifth step with this guy. And poor guy. I mean, he was a year sober. He had just worked the steps, and he worked with me, and I was like, page 18, you know, like we did it in like three, I think it took 3 weekends in a row. Like it was not a one sitting thing. It was, this guy was like, and he looked so bored. Like he was bored out of his mind because he could hear the patterns of my behavior and I couldn't. I felt like this was a new wrong. It was a new person. This is all what they did to me. So that was my first experience with the steps. What happened was that I didn't do a first step. I didn't even know what a first step was. You know, my first, second, and third step in AA the first time was, I can't, he can, let him. I've heard that a couple times. And, you know, I heard if you've gotten to the rooms, you've done your first three steps. That's what I heard too. So we did a little homework, like, what does powerlessness look like? You know, what does unmanageability look like? And I wrote like a bunch of things, you know, but I didn't really get it. And I didn't know enough to say, like, I don't understand this. I didn't say, like, you know what? I don't get this. I don't feel like I have this. This is not making sense to me. I didn't ask questions. I just did what I was supposed to do because everybody else looked like they knew what they were doing. Everybody in AA looked like they knew what they were doing. They were getting chips. They were getting sober. They were sponsoring people. They were getting cars. They were getting houses. They were getting TV shows, whatever. And my life in AA got worse and worse and worse and worse. It was awful. And so what happens, right? If I don't get what I want, and I'm putting a lot of work in, I might think about doing something else, right? This isn't working for me. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. You know what? I'm not an alcoholic. If I was an alcoholic, this would be working for me, right? I would be getting all this other stuff that everyone's getting. I must not be an alcoholic. So my brain told me that. My brain told me that, and so, you know, and so I picked up sober. And I would hear that from a sponsor, like, but you understand, like, you were sober when you picked up, right? And I'm like, that doesn't even make any sense. What are you talking about? Because a lot of times I didn't feel sober when I picked up. Does anyone relate to that? I was not in my right mind. I was not sober when I picked up, because sobriety feels like in a room, I'm lucid, I understand what's going on. It feels like power and control. I have power, I have choice, I'm sober. I did not have choice. I lost choice. I didn't choose, and I couldn't explain this with my own mouth. I didn't choose to pick up. And I would hear in the rooms, you chose to pick up that day. And I would say, no, I didn't. I didn't choose to pick up. And so I felt like something was really wrong with me, right? So that went on and on. I'd get a year, you know, I'd get like 12 months, I'd get 11 months, I'd get 3 days, I'd get 6 days. And I was always back. I was back. Because it's really bad out there for me. Like, it doesn't change. It's right. I'm right back to where I started. And it's scary, okay? So I'm back until finally I'm in a hospital. You know, I have to put myself into a rehab. And it got so bad. Like, I'm in the book, you know, like, jails, institutions, and death. I'm an institution person, okay? I've never been to jail. I've never been arrested. I've never gotten a DUI. I drove drunk every single day for 10 years in Los Angeles. I've been pulled over drunk and never gotten arrested. I'm not the person that gets arrested. I'm the person that goes insane. I'm that person. Not to say that that won't happen yet. I hope it never does. But I had to put myself in a rehab. That took years and years of convincing. And everyone in AA was shaking their head at me like, we can't help you. We don't know what to do, man. And I was like, I don't understand. Why is everybody turning their back on me in AA? This does turn out well, by the way. I don't want everyone here to be like, AA sucks. It's amazing. But there's a part in the book, no human power can relieve me of my alcoholism. No person, no human power can do that for me. And I was looking for sponsors and churches and self-help books and homework and all kinds of stuff to give me the answer to my problem. And I'm a very slow learner. 13 years later, I finally meet somebody that just said the right word, or I was beaten into submission enough to where I could say, I can't do this. And I could see that nobody I had tried, nothing I tried, no therapist, no amount of psychopharmaceuticals. I was on 5 antipsychotics, and I was so crazy. I couldn't leave my house. I was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was gacked out of my mind on all kinds of medication that was prescribed to me from a psychiatrist, one of the best in Los Angeles. And so gacked out, I had to go to rehab to detox off the meds to get sober. And that took 3 months. So what happened recently is that I ended up here. I'd never wanted to be back here. But I didn't want to be where I was, right? Like, I could not stay sober. I couldn't stay sober in L.A. There was something about it, right? It's L.A. I know everybody. I know all the places. I couldn't walk down the street without running into somebody that triggered me, right? Everything was triggering, right? I was powerless, and I didn't know that. I just thought it was L.A. I needed to get away from L.A., so I came home. My sister was dying of cancer, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to move in with my sister, and I'm going to take care of her and all this stuff. I'm going to be a good brother, right? That'll help. And I hooked into some meetings. Thank God, Reyes, you know, exists and had started the Rainbow Meeting. There was a gay meeting in Visalia, if you don't know that. It's at the Cahuilla Delta Rehab Center on Saturday night. It's called the Rainbow Meeting. And Reyes was very welcoming, and I made that my home group, and I was very, very broken when I got here. I was angry, at God. I was angry why I couldn't get sober. I was angry why AA didn't work. I didn't know what to do. I heard this word God way more here than I did in LA. You hear a lot of higher power there. You hear a lot of different stuff, spirit of the universe, right? And that's okay. Whatever you need to call the thing that's keeping you sober, great. I thought I had failed AA. I thought, I can't do this. I thought, I've tried everything. I met that person that said, you can't do it. Great. Let's start from there. What's the one thing you haven't tried? Is the question he asked that changed everything. What's the one thing you haven't tried? And I was so full of hatred toward God. I said, God? And he goes, I don't know. Let's check it out. So, he got me a book. He got me a workbook. We started going through the book word by word. And I was like, this is going to take forever. But it's exactly what I needed to do. I needed somebody who had failed just as miserably as I had failed. Our stories were so similar, we couldn't be more different, but our stories were very, very similar. Our feelings were similar. And so I had a spiritual experience by working the steps. And not just the big one, you know, like at 12 or whatever, but I had spiritual experiences on every single page of the book. Because we didn't move on until I understood what was going on. We didn't move on until I could see clearly what we were reading. And I could find myself in the book. And really weird things started happening. You know, weird things started happening. Like, I got sober. I got humble. I stopped. I finally would start hearing things about powerlessness and unmanageability that had nothing to do with taking a drink. Because I couldn't stay sober, but I hadn't taken a drink in a very long time. There were a lot of other things that were going on, right? Right now, I am... When do I have to wrap up? Do you guys know? Okay. So, I needed to look at, am I an alcoholic? Because if I have failed this many times, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. So we looked at that first. So I looked into the book, we read through the book, we went through the first step. And he was asking me questions that no one had ever asked me before, right? And they're in the book. I would hear things like there's instructions, and I had been always asking, where are the instructions for this program? Where are they? I want instructions. And someone would say, they're in the 12 and 12. And I would get a 12 and 12, and there's no instructions in there. There's no, like, how do you work the steps? I had read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous probably, I'm going to say 100 times. Not the stories, but certainly the first 164 pages in meetings, out of meetings, at home, and I didn't know there were instructions in there. I didn't know. I knew the steps were in there, but I knew they were in how it works, and that was it. I just knew there was a list of things to do, and I thought it was kind of just a mystery of how you did them. I had never had an experience with the steps. And so, I started to have that, and I started to, and it's exactly what I needed. So by the time I got to through my first step, I was so broken. I didn't feel good. I didn't feel better. I was miserable. I was really, really miserable because I really realize now that I'm really sick. I have this thing and I'm scared. I'm scared now because I really know that I can't do this thing. I can't do this thing, and I'm going to need to do something else that I've never tried. And so that was God. And so we had to look at the second step, and I had to look at my conception of a higher power. And that was really, really hard for me because I was a gay kid, and I got all these mixed messages about going to hell and being gay and all that stuff. And it was really awful. And I don't even really remember where those messages came from. Probably television, because nobody sat across from me and told me, "You're gay, you're going to hell." I had adopted a lot of my higher power ideas from other people. And so I had to, like, really, really, really look at that. And then, and something magical happened. We started talking about God. And it was okay for me to be angry at God. And it was okay for me to get through that and talk to God. And then we started reading things in the book, like, you know, a loving, caring, higher power, a friend, you know, all of these words that I'd always wanted God to be, but I never felt like that. I was good enough for God. I never felt like I was going to be able to ever ask God for help for anything. There were a lot of things in my life as a child that proved to me that God doesn't answer prayers. Okay. I was abused in my own home. I was raped. I was molested. All kinds of terrible things happened to me. And I prayed every night that they would stop, and they never stopped. Right. So my relationship with a higher power was, if I don't get what I want and you don't answer my prayer, you don't exist. I didn't have a different idea of God. Was that if something happened to me, if something terrible happened to me, and I was able to get through it, and that God got me through it, you know, and that experience was going to help somebody else later. So in that, looking at that, I had to start looking at my selfishness and self-centeredness, because it was just always about me, 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 me. I'm not getting what I want. I'm not getting what I want. I don't have this connection with a higher power. You know, I'm not living in LA anymore. I'm not doing what I want. Why am I here? There were a lot of questions like this, and it never, I had never thought to, I never stayed sober long enough to just get sober. You know, I never, was open-minded enough to, you know, I had ideas. I hadn't run out of ideas. It took me 13 years to run out of ideas, long enough to just do what was right in front of me and read a book. Read a book, write a little bit, talk to another alcoholic. Where I'm at right now is I'm working with a different sponsor. I have a sponsee for the first time in my life. And I'm getting this magical experience. Well, I'm in my sex inventory right now, which is not magical. But I'm working with a sponsee, and we're going through the book, and I'm just doing what my sponsor did for me. It's like not brain surgery. It's sort of mystical, and it's beautiful. I mean, I'm getting this experience with my, with this guy I'm working with, and we just started reading, where I can sit across from him and I see everything that all of those ideas that I had about what sobriety is and what alcoholism is and what I can do and what I can't do and why my family's so important. I'm getting sober for them and they're my higher power, and all the things that I used to say are coming out of this guy's mouth, and I can just sit back and let it happen because I know that I can't keep this guy sober. It's not my job. I am so happy to sit across from him and take him through it sentence by sentence until some light bulb goes off and he goes, oh. And then we read the next sentence. It's like crazy. Because I had always fantasized, like in LA, there's like these family sponsorships. It's very weird. There's like a grand sponsor and a sponsee, and that sponsee has a bunch of other sponsees, and they all go to parties and they all do things, and it's a big fellowship. It's really cool. But I had fantasized about having this like lineage, right? Like I was going to get the best sponsor, and I was going to be a sponsor, and I was going to have all these little sponsees, and they're going to have sponsees, and that's not what it's like for me today. What it's like is I pulled into the same Starbucks that I met my sponsor at 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I brought the guy the book. We opened it up and we started reading. And I left there knowing more about my sobriety than about his. And that was beautiful. It was like, I don't want to get too weird on you guys, but the only way to explain it was that God kept telling me, don't say anything, don't say anything, don't say anything, shut up, shut up, shut up, don't say anything. And I didn't say anything, which is a miracle. But I had this experience, and I know that he had an experience. I don't know what that experience was, but I could see that something happened, you know. Bill reminded me to bring this up, and I don't want to, it's going to flop, I know it, but when I was going through the first step, there's a part in where it tells you to go to the appendix and look at the spiritual experience, right? And it talks about that some people have this bright light moment, and I was always calling my sponsor at like 4 a.m. I'm in the work, and I had this bright light moment, and you know, I was having a lot of those early on, and he was like, yeah. But there was one that really struck me. So I go to the spiritual experience, it's talking about it, and at the very end, I'm going to read it because I'll screw it up, and if I don't get it right. I had always heard, how do you stay sober? Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, right? How? It's the how. So I had heard that for 13 years. 13 years. I couldn't have told you where it was in the book, but I could have told you that there's a saying, and it's how you stay sober, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. So I get to the end of this spiritual appendix, spiritual experience. It's an appendix. It's in the end. And it doesn't say that at all. It says willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness. And I thought God was speaking to me. Like, I'm newly sober, right? Like, I'm having these experiences. But it was not the how. It was the who. And that's exactly what I'd been missing for 13 years. I had been trying how to stay sober a million different ways, a million different sponsors, I can't tell you how many meetings I've been to. Like, and everybody would say, we don't know why you can't get it. We don't know why. We don't know why. And there was no who in my program. The who was me. And I can't be my own higher power. So I circled, you know, willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness. And I called them and I said, I can't believe this is in the book. It's the who, not the how. It's the who, not the how. And I was like, there were a couple moments this last time that really just, it was like, duh. I had heard God, 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 and I would just go, God, you know, I don't want to hear about that. I don't want, you know, and the Lord's Prayer, when I got here and you had to say the Lord's Prayer, it like made my skin crawl. And you know why it made my skin crawl? Because I needed an exorcism. I needed an exorcism when I got here. That's why it made me freak out. I had had so much damage. I could not hear the word God. And I'm so glad that I can now, you know. Everything that, my life doesn't look anything like I want it to look like at all. This is not what I wanted, but it's exactly what I needed. I have everything that I've ever kind of really wanted. It just doesn't look like I wanted it to look like. You know, I wanted to be respected and sober and have a great job and have a family and have a fiance and have a home and have a dog. And I didn't want it in Visalia, but I got it. You know, I always dreamed of being on a billboard. I'm on one now, but it's for like, you know, Act for Women and Girls. I'm the only dude on the billboard, and it's like somewhere in Fresno. Not what I wanted, but it's kind of what I got. You know, like, so I'm in the paper a lot, but not for what I wanted. I wanted to be famous. I wanted to be a famous actor. When I tell people I was an actor, they're like, yeah. No, you're not, right? But I'm in the paper now. And you know why? Because I run a gay and lesbian organization, an LGBT center in my hometown, with a bunch of other sober people. That was not my dream. I did not dream of leaving my hometown, becoming the gayest person I could, come home, and open a center. That was not my dream. But it's exactly where God put me. God put me exactly where I am needed. I'm really, really grateful to be sober. I'm really grateful that I could fill 40 minutes or so. I'm grateful for Bill. Thank you for asking me. And I'm grateful for every single person that's ever tried to help me. I was unhelpable. I was untouchable. You could not help me. I was constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. I was unwilling. I wanted what you had, but I wouldn't do the work. I couldn't do the work. The miracle hadn't happened yet. I got here too soon. That's it. Thanks.